So good evening, everyone. Welcome to the second in our six classes on thought transformation. Again, there'll be a break next week, and then we'll pick up the Monday evening afterwards. I would like to start with some prayers and some meditation. So if you're here in the Gompa, you have the gold prayer book, page 34. And if you're at home, I think Linda is putting it up online. Let's see, we'll start with Taking Refuge and Bodhicitta, and then do Four Immeasurables, Seven Limb Prayer, and the short mandala offering. If you're here in the Gompa with me, you can read these out loud. If you're at home, I ask you to put yourself on mute because there's a lag time and it gets pretty confusing. So we'll start with Taking Refuge and Generating Bodhicitta three times together in English. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryatayami. Okay, and now we'll begin our first meditation session of the evening. Begin by checking your posture. If you're sitting on a cushion, sit a little bit towards the front of the cushion, not smack in the middle, but in the front third so your pelvis opens up. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean back, but sit straight. Our back is a little straighter than we normally sit, not rigid, but said to be king-like or noble, the posture. Our head is straight on our shoulders, not to one side or the other, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes either lightly closed or very slightly open. Lips lightly closed. Our tongue on the roof of our mouth behind our upper teeth. Our shoulders down and a little bit back so our chest is open. Our upper arms away from the sides of our torso. Right hand on left with thumbs touching just slightly below the level of our navel. If you're sitting on a cushion, Your legs are crossed in a position that you find comfortable and stable. If you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor, or if you want to put a cushion under your feet, that's fine. So just scan your body from top to bottom. Identify any sources of tension or discomfort and address those now so they won't become a recurring theme of your meditation. And to help settle our mind so that we become a little bit more focused and less distracted, we take three deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and then contracting towards our spine on the out-breath. And just do that three times. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we start our meditation by setting our motivation. And as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the motivation of the awakened mind, the awakened state. The aspiration that everything we do, including this simple meditation, is done so that we can become enlightened to benefit all beings. Become enlightened for the benefit of all beings. Incredibly vast and powerful motivation. So just think about that for a moment. Set your motivation. And having set our motivation, we now begin the meditation. Mind, awareness on the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through the openings of our nostrils. Just that sensation of air moving in and out. We place the mind directly on that. Not on anything else. Just a direct experience of the movement of the air in and out through our nostrils. And we just stay with that for the next 5 minutes. And every time we notice that our mind has wandered off to another object, we set that aside and come back over and over and over again. And we end our dedication, our meditation with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something out of the ordinary that has made a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. And now I would like to read together our root text, which is the 8 verses of thought transformation that was written by Langri Tampa approximately 1,000 years ago. His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said that he recites this text every day. And he says when he's in an airport waiting for a flight or something, it's the text that he meditates on. And he also recites it to himself when he knows he's going into a difficult meeting or a situation that may be problematic. So it's a very important text to him. So if you're here in the Gompa, the text is on page 161. And we'll just read the numbered sections together out loud. If you're at home, let's see, Linda, you go bring that up. And you can read along with us, but do mute yourself again, please. We'll just go through the 8 verses. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings, who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. Vigilant, the moment a delusion arises in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. When, out of envy, others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. When someone whom I have benefited and in whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. Undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, be released from the bondage of attachment. So it's a quite short text, and it's easy to memorize if you're inclined in that direction. And but there's a lot packed into each verse. Tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about thought transformation in general, and then discuss the first verse and the second verse if we have time for that. So we're talking about thought transformation, this vast area of the Buddhist teachings, also referred to as Lojong, that Langri Tampa has summarized in these 8 pithy verses. So one question we'll ask is, do I want to transform my thoughts? Why would I want to transform my thoughts? And what does the Buddha mean by that? And what the Buddha is talking about here is replacing our thoughts that are motivated by anger, which is basically the wish to harm others, thoughts motivated by attachment or clinging, and thoughts motivated by ignorance. And when we use ignorance in this sense, we're referring to not seeing reality as it is, but seeing a misperception. So ignorance is not seeing things the way they actually exist. So those are sometimes referred to as the three afflictions. Okay, and the Buddha is saying, if you want to, you don't have to do this, but I suggest, based on my own experience, that you will be happier if you replace thoughts motivated by the three afflictions and replace them by thoughts motivated by generosity, patience, compassion, the wish that others be free of suffering, and love, the wish that others be happy. Okay, so you replace the thoughts motivated by the three afflictions and replace them with thoughts motivated by the more positive qualities. More positive qualities, and that those are the ones that make you happy. So this is enlightened self-interest. He's saying, do this because you will be happier. Okay? Also, we want to replace those thoughts. Well, so why do we want to get rid of the thoughts motivated by the three afflictions? And he gave us lots of reasons. One, they lead us to harm others, which we don't want to do. Okay. They create negative karma. By, you know, this is not the module on karma, but that comes up in every module, by which he meant they place imprints on our mind stream that will cause problems for us in the future. Actions motivated by anger, attachment, and ignorance will cause us to suffer in the future. So that's another reason we want to replace them. Okay. A third reason is if we look closely, we'll see that in general, thoughts motivated by the three afflictions agitate our mind. They keep us upset. Now, sometimes there's some positive energy there that we get a little bit of charge on, but it still agitates our mind. Our mind is not calm. It's not focused. And worst of all, thoughts motivated by the three afflictions prevent us from seeing things accurately. They poison our view so that when we're looking at other people or world events or whatever through those distorting mirrors, so to speak, we're not seeing reality as it is. We're not seeing what's really going on, and they prevent us from living life to our fullest. So those are some of the reasons why we would want to decrease the negative thoughts, eliminate, or as it says in the song, eliminate the negative, accentuate the positive, that old song. So those are some reasons that we can think about those. You don't have to accept any of this. So that's why we would want to do it. So it sounds like a good idea. I mean, I don't want to be creating negative karma. I'd like to see reality directly. I don't want to create an agitated, disturbed mind. So it sounds good. The next thing we have to ask, is it really possible? Or is this just pie in the sky? Is this just some Eastern version of the power of positive thinking where we deny what's really going on in our mind and fool ourselves that we've changed, okay? So this gets back to the Buddhist view of the nature of what the mind is like. For example, when we think, for example, and I'm not going to name names, but we think of a politician we don't like, the one we dislike most of all, and it's going to be different for everyone. We think we have no control, and negative thoughts arise, okay? Resentment, anger, frustration. It just seems to come up automatically, as if we have no control over it, okay? And the Buddha is saying, actually, that is just a habit that you've developed over time. Every time you think that way, you're getting better at that habit, okay? It's like learning to play the piano. We've taught ourselves to react angrily to certain people, to certain situations, to certain things we hear, to certain foods we don't like, to certain colors that we don't like, Okay. Those are just habits that we've developed. Some of them in this lifetime, some of them possibly in previous lifetimes, if we accept the idea of previous lifetimes. But they are not the fix. They are not the ultimate nature of our mind. They are just habits. And as we know, we can abandon old habits and we can develop new habits. We can actually train our mind so that when we see someone that previously we really disliked, actual warm, kind, compassionate feelings arise spontaneously. Okay? They just come up naturally when we see that person. Okay? Now, when we first start these practices, it's going to seem extremely forced, extremely superficial. Okay? But it's like, you know, learning to play the piano. When you start, it's incredibly awkward. And then after time, it just comes naturally to you. You just see the music and it goes straight into your fingers and you don't have to grit your teeth and do it. So the Buddha is saying our mind has no fixed qualities. We think it does, and that's a misperception on our part. And we think we're kind of stuck with this mind that likes this and doesn't like that. And the Buddha says, no, it's much more flexible and much more changeable than you realize. And so that's how we can actually transform our thoughts. Initially, it seems awkward, but with time, it actually comes naturally. Okay, so that's what these verses are to help us with, to start to practice that. And this is something we can work with right now. You know, a Buddha doesn't have to practice thought transformation, because a Buddha, which we all aim for, negative thoughts never arise in the mind of a Buddha. The Buddha is someone who has practiced this and has gotten to the point where there's nothing but compassion and wisdom there. Okay, negative afflictions never arise. They've been completely eliminated from the mind stream of a Buddha, an enlightened being. Okay, so this is training ourselves in that path, always motivated by bodhicitta, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all living beings. Okay? Any questions or comments on anything I've said so far, either here in the room or on Zoom?
Kurt, I'm going to bring the microphone to you. Oh, thanks, Chris. And if anyone has any questions who are watching online, just leave it in the chat or just raise your hand and wait.
That sounds wonderful in a vacuum, but we live in a world where typically we're reacting to forces that
mm-hmm.
react with us. So how do you deal with the fact that your non-reaction or your loving reaction is met by the opposite is,
yeah, okay.
Or you're not achieving your goals because you're essentially giving in to the other mm-hmm. side. How do you address that?
Well, first thing is, we can't control how anyone reacts to our own actions, so we don't know. And we'll talk about that in the verse. But what we're talking about here is our thoughts and our mind. Okay. Now, how that expresses is in action, you know, you could be very forceful and aggressive and in someone's face motivated by love and compassion. Okay, it's not saying you become a doormat or you are just completely passive. Okay, you can think about Jesus throwing the money changers out of the temple or something. You know, it looked very assertive, but we're told that it's motivated by compassion, or Martin Luther King and his drive for racial progress, you know. I think he was motivated by love and compassion. That doesn't, you know, the actions will follow on that, the appropriate actions. And that's where what we call wisdom comes in, knowing the right thing to do in the right circumstance. But we're talking about the thoughts in our mind motivate. You know, we can achieve things motivated by anger, but the Buddha's saying, you can achieve the same things motivated by love and compassion, and you will be happier. So it doesn't mean we ignore injustice or we acquiesce. It just means we're working on what's our motivation. Is that?
Yes, thank you. That was
good. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Okay, so let's move on to the first verse. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. So apparently in Indian mythology at the time of the Buddha, there was this idea that there was a wish-fulfilling jewel somewhere at the bottom of the ocean. And if you could find it, this jewel would grant all your wishes, kind of like Aladdin's lamp or something. Okay. So the Buddha is saying, all sentient beings, I shall hold them more dear at all times, more dear than a wish-fulfilling jewel. So notice he doesn't say all sentient beings that I like and who are nice to me. We're not allowed to narrow it down like that. He's saying all sentient beings across the board, okay, from the lowest cockroach to the worst politician, to our dearest friends, our family members, to people that we haven't even met. We want to start seeing them as more precious to me than a wish-fulfilling jewel. Okay? Every one of them, individually, without exception, see every sentient being as more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel. And why would we say that? Why in the world would we say that other beings are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel? And there are a lot of ways to think about this. The first is, if we truly want to become enlightened, which means we develop our qualities of wisdom and our qualities of compassion. Well, you can't develop compassion and avoid. You have to develop compassion in relation to others. Okay, you can't go through life and not think about others and somehow develop compassion, the wish that others be free of suffering. It's kind of contradictory. So if we truly want to become enlightened, we need others as the focus of our compassion. Okay, so no others, no enlightenment. Okay? We learn from others. Okay, everything that we've learned in this lifetime has come from others, from our teachers, from books that we've read, from things that we've heard, from conversations that we take and process. And that becomes part of our mind. So we learn from others. And we don't just learn from the people we like, from the people who are kind to us. In fact, we probably learn more about ourselves and about others from people who are difficult. Okay? For people who we really dislike. If we're honest with ourselves, we can see if we look at it in this way, we can see the difficult people as our teachers, the ones that show us where we still have work to do. Okay? So we see others as our teachers. We benefit from others in terms of everything we have, our clothes, our food, Kadampa Center, the building, the roads we drove on to get here, the gas that we put in our car, the automobile itself, the internet that we use to find out where we're going. All of that is the product of others. Nobody does that for themselves. So we benefit incredibly from others. Okay? And then getting back to people that we find difficult, they are the ones in particular who allow us to develop the qualities of patience, generosity, of true compassion, true love. If we start from the point of view that everyone wants to be happy, okay, no matter how they go about it in what we see as unskillful ways, okay, they can be the object of our compassion and our love, and they are in some ways our greatest teachers, what we truly allow us to, and what they allow us to develop, okay? I don't think you could become enlightened if you just went through life with nothing but nice people. Okay, you've got to deal with the others and see, how is my mind reacting to this? And another thing that we can think of is when we're interacting with people who cause us problems, they're helping us to use up our negative karma. Okay? So something that could be an unpleasant situation now could ripen into something horrible, okay? And then that quality of an unpleasant interaction with someone, that's the product of our own karma, okay? It's not just happening for no reason. That's karma that we've created, okay, to be in difficult situations, to be butting heads with people, okay? But the ultimate, you know, it all comes down, you know, there are all these different ways you can look at it and argue with yourself. We couldn't become enlightened without others, okay? People we like, people we don't like, people we don't care about. To become enlightened, other beings are required. It can't be done, you know, in a vacuum without anyone else. So that is why they are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel. They are ultimately the cause of our own enlightenment. Okay? So motivated by bodhicitta, the wish to benefit all sentient beings, not just the nice ones, we start to think about how precious every other being is. Okay? And this is the first type of thought transformation the Buddha said to work on. And of course, when we start to think this way, it seems extremely artificial, forced, even a little gimmicky or something. But with time and with practice, these thoughts start to arise spontaneously, replacing the three afflictions. I think we've all met some people who seem to go through life and just never see an enemy. You know, people that we have, there are people we have horrible problems with, and this other person, you know, has no problems with them at all. Or in our own experience, we've had people that we've really disliked at sometimes who may have become friends. People who are strangers became very close. Okay, so there's implies that, you know, our thoughts can change. Okay, and this is just kind of accelerating that process, really putting it into practice. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes,
I have
Linda.
One. Mm-hmm. And that includes not just people, like animals as well. So
yes,
with the creepy crawlies and things.
Cockroaches
like that
that scatter when you turn the lights on in the kitchen.
Right. Just
okay,
want to
we
make
can,
sure we don't forget about
yeah,
that.
We can train our minds so that we don't go, yuck. But say, these are sentient beings who want to be happy.
We can just go, wow. Check it out.
Okay. Any other comments? Anyone at home? Okay. Let's do a little meditation on the first verse. Now, we're moving beyond our simple concentration meditation into what we refer to as analytic meditation, where we take a chosen topic and it's kind of a way of thinking, but at a very deep and concentrated level. So we analyze it, hold it up against our experience, say, does this seem right? Does this not seem right? Can I feel that? Can I think this way at all? Is this possible even a small way? So we'll give it a try. So again, check your posture. 3 deep breaths from the abdomen. Set your motivation. And just a couple minutes of concentration on the breath. Focus your mind. And keeping our mind focused on the object, which in this case is the first verse. I'll read it just once. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all time. So what he said, when he says the greatest possible benefit, he's saying determined to become enlightened through the help of others. I shall hold them more precious than a wish-fulfilling gem. All sentient beings at all times. So just keep your concentration on that. Get clear on what it means. Ask yourself, is this possible? Can I begin to hold difficult people in my life as precious? Can I see them as benefiting me? You may want to bring to mind a particular person we have problems with, and see if, you know, effortfully you can begin to change the way that you see them. And you can relax your concentration. Has anybody ever heard the phrase, a teacher's cook? Sometimes you hear that in Buddhist circles. It kind of sums this first verse up. A teacher was a great Indian Buddhist master who lived in the 8th century, I think. And he was the one who took the teachings of the Buddha back to Tibet after they had kind of gone extinct and become very corrupt. And he had this cook. We always had travel with him. Cook was filthy. He smelled to high heaven. He couldn't cook worth a damn. Okay. He'd bring the food in and he'd spill it on the floor and pick it up and put it back on the plate. And then he'd spill it in a teacher's lap. And people said, a teacher, why do you keep this cook? And he said, he's my greatest teacher. I've developed all my positive qualities thanks to him. So someone, you know, we're not very highly developed, but sometimes if you're in a difficult situation with someone, if you can just think Atisha's cook, that may give you a little bit of Buddhist perspective of what's going on. You can follow the example of Atisha. So he kept that cook till the end of his life, apparently. And didn't starve to death, as far as we know. Yeah. Okay, verse 2. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. Okay, that brings up a lot of issues, doesn't it? Yeah. Lowest of all, okay? I mean, this is not telling you to become it has to be interpreted. I mean, it sounds like it's saying to have no self-respect and no, just major inferiority complex. And I don't think the Buddha is saying that at all. I mean, this is based very much on having a sense of self-respect and that you're working on your spiritual path. But this is really about developing some humility and even a little bit of humbleness, being a little less arrogant. Okay, it's really talking about having respect for others. And it doesn't mean respect for the people that we think are smart or the people that we think are nice. Or the people who are doing things for us, or the people who have a lot of money. Again, it is unqualifiedly for all living beings, including animals. It's having respect for them, acknowledging that we can learn from them, that this person who's in my face yelling and screaming and is so wrong and doesn't see what's going on, and has given me all this crap that I do not deserve, that person can be seen as a teacher. Okay, I should have that much respect for them. Or for this person who seems to be doing all the wrong things, causing all these problems, I should have some respect for that person. Okay, and the person who checks me out at the grocery store that I have minimal interaction with, I should have respect for that person. And not just for the teachers who sit up here like Geshe Gelug, we have respect for them, but for all sentient beings. Okay? This means that when we're in an argument with someone, we don't cling to winning. We don't cling to being right. Okay? We don't cling to making points. But sometimes it said we give up the victory to others because this is how we learn. So it's a very tricky thing. It's not about self-abnegation or self-humiliation. It's really having some respect for yourself and having the same or even more respect for others. Okay, this is, again, not the way we normally think in these situations. Normally, when someone attacks us, we want to attack back and win. and make the point, argue with them and do this and this. Maybe change our attitude, okay? Say, I'm learning something in this situation. I should respect this person. They're another human being, or they're another sentient being who, like myself, wants to be happy, has the potential, just as I do, to become enlightened. We're really much more alike than we are different. Okay? So this is really about having respect for all other beings. And the way it's phrased is that I know some people find this off-putting, but I shall always consider myself the lowest of all. That's, you know, not in the low in the sense of a doormat, but low in the sense of a student in front of a teacher. I mean, completely unlike the way we usually think. Okay. Any questions or comments on that? Okay, so this has to be, you have to have a sense of, a valid sense of self here. You know, if you're having major psychological or psychiatric issues, this may not be something that you want to practice right off the bat, but you have to have some organized sense of self really before you do this.
Robbie, we do have a question on Zoom. Nico, okay. You can go ahead and unmute.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, Robbie. A question about the first verse, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the wish fulfilling jewel, is that related to, you know, Tenrezig holds the jewel in his hands, the two middle ones? Is it also related to why we, when we do this, we keep our hands a little open? Is it a symbol? Is there something symbolic, or is that just?
You hear lots of reference to different jewels, and I can't tell you which ones are the same, but I've thought the same thing myself. I think this wish fulfilling jewel is just, my understanding, it was just something that was talked about at the time, like Aladdin's cave or something. You know, it didn't have any real spiritual significance. It was just something that would fulfill all your material wishes and nothing more than that. It's not like the jewel and the lotus or the other things that we talk about. Okay. Yeah, good question. Okay. So let's do one more quick meditation to wind up. Okay, on the second verse. Okay, let the chatter dissolve. We'll assume our motivation continues. Just a moment of concentration on the breath. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. So you might want to think about a situation you're in recently, a difficult situation where you and someone else are having a disagreement about something. How could your thoughts have been different in that situation so that you weren't so tightly attached to winning or being right, but more approaching this as an opportunity to learn from someone? It may seem totally fantastical, but it's possible to start thinking that way at least some of the time. So think about how this would play out in your actual life. And you can relax your concentration. Okay, so we have four more classes. And let's see, next class, which will be in 2 weeks, we're going to do verses 3 and 4. The week after that, we'll do 5 and 6. Third week, we're going to do just 7. That's about taking and giving, which is a practice called Tonglen, which is enough of a topic that we'll just do that one that week. And then we'll finish up with 8 and a review in the last week. So 2 weeks till we're together again. Homework is to work on the readings. And I'd like you to sit in meditation 6 days each week. Begin each session by reading the 8 verses. It's nice to read it out loud, and you may even want to commit to memorizing it by the end of the module. So start by reading that, then do a couple minutes of breathing meditation the first week. Follow that with an analytic meditation on the first verse. Second week, since we won't be here together next Monday, analytic meditation on the second verse. And that's for 6 days out of the week. And then we'll be back here together in 2 weeks. Okay. Any questions or comments before we break up? Okay. Just give it a, just work with this. It, like I say, it seems artificial and difficult, but the Buddha says if we practice this, these thoughts start to arise spontaneously, just the way the negative thoughts arise seemingly spontaneous right now. So be optimistic and be compassionate with yourself. Okay, thank you, everyone.